Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week News podcast for the week of Monday, June 6th. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we are going to talk about e-discovery. It is no secret that e-discovery is one of the more painful and expensive headaches your corporate legal department faces, but most of the discussion around how to improve e-discovery revolves around the pre-production phase, which is how you might impose a litigation hold and how you actually find all the electronic data you might need to turn over to opposing counsel in a lawsuit. Today, however, we're going to look at the problems you encounter post-production. That is what you do with all of this data after you find it, how you might present it to other parties, and even how you actually end a litigation hold that you had previously put in place. Now, to talk about all of that with us today, we are joined by Michael Lackey. He is a partner in the e-discovery practice at the law firm of Mayer Brown, and he recently published a legal bulletin on just these sort of issues. So, Mike, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Matt, I'm delighted. Thanks so much for inviting me.
So, first question then. Let's say we have waved our magic wand and we have identified all of the electronic data we are supposed to produce for some sort of a dispute. What are the main considerations to remember for producing it quickly and cost-effectively? What are the problems and the headaches that you see people encounter?
Yeah, and that's obviously a great question. As you pointed out in the intro, this is one of the most costly parts of all litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just go back one small step before there, and I know
sure.
It kind of links into the intro, but it's one of the most important things you do before you get to here. And it is having a very good and followed and understood document retention program so that you don't have more stuff than you need to have to run your business and to comply with your legal and regulatory obligations. So that, number one, is probably the single most important thing you can do to manage cost in e-discovery going forward. Once you have that part in place, the next most important part is that it's all about the volume. And so what you want to be doing is, throughout this process, trying to limit the number of custodians that are going to have relevant information, applying search terms in a way, search terms and other advanced techniques, so that you can target precisely what you want to need, once again, to drive down the volume that you're ultimately going to have to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to greatly reduce both your processing costs, which are not insubstantial depending on the size of the particular piece of litigation, but probably even far more important are the review costs. And this is where attorneys, still in this day and age, for the vast majority of cases, have got to put eyes on paper to determine final determinations on relevance. And certainly, under the prevailing law for privilege, you want to make sure that you have a process in place so that if something inadvertently does get produced, you can go back under the current applicable standards and be able to claw back or get back that particular privileged document, and you don't have any broader waiver issues.
Mm-hmm.
So volume, very, very important here as far as those kind of processes. On the between the two, on the relevant side, now we're talking about producing it quickly and cost-effectively. On the review side, there's really, you have the relevant side where, again, in kind of modern analytics, the ability to identify categories of documents, get them categorized so you have like documents together, greatly expedites a review.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine how much easier it is if you're sitting here as an attorney and you're getting the same kinds of documents. Let's say it's a contract dispute, and you're able to identify the contract, and through using either advanced analytics or search terms or things like that, you're able to collect together in one review set the drafts of the document, the actual contract, and associated documents. And you can do that these days. And so what you now have is you have a single reviewer going through those documents, and they're able to see the different drafts of it. They're all collected in one place. And so you can greatly expedite that review. They're able to look at this draft, a slightly modified draft. They can watch the history of this progress. And once they've made those privilege calls, they really don't have to make them again. They're applying it to a very similar document so they can get through it much more expeditiously. So that's one incredibly important way where technology has helped us reduce the review costs. for getting through these documents.
Now, you had talked about search terms and analytics and whatnot, so that does raise a sort of prosaic question of just simple things like proper format of the data and the documents you have. And at first glance, that sounds like a slightly geeky IT sort of thing to worry about, but in the grand scheme of all this data, how important is it that you have an easily searchable format, a standardized sort of collection of data and storage of it, things like that?
No, it's very important, as you point out. The more alike the data, the file types, the information that the human is putting eyes on, the easier it is for the human reviewer, the attorney, to process that information and make these legal determinations so that you can reduce the review cost. So that's a very important aspect of getting through a review quickly, cost-effectively, and accurately, by the way. Again, if you're looking at information that's very similar and you're making difficult privilege calls, which oftentimes we are trying to make those calls, it's much easier to have one person making those same calls on similar kinds of documents. And so having the documents in the same kind of format and treated the same way is going to just help the attorney in making those difficult calls.
Let me ask another question about making this more of a sustainable process for companies. Corporations do tend to get sued quite often. And I'm wondering, for example, is it wise to do something like to flag high-value data that might end up in discovery repeatedly, or do you create an archive of most frequently subpoenaed data or something to that effect? But what are the mechanisms you can install to make this process repeatable and easy over the long term?
No, you're exactly right, is that if you're in repeat litigation, let's say you are producing certain kinds of products and you understand right at the get-go that you're likely to have litigation in these particular areas, one important thing that you're going to want to do is make sure that documents that as they're getting created and you're going through the EDRM model, if you will, are handled in a way so you can get to those documents cheaply and inexpensively. So one of the things we talk about is if you're in that kind of, I call it a litigation risk profile, and what you want to do is you want to go to what I call an indexing method.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you will automatically in those kinds of, it's all about having the documents that you're going to have to produce in litigation repeatedly, or you think you're going to have to produce repeatedly, so that you can access them quickly and efficiently to reduce those costs. You don't want to have to go searching all across the company to find these documents when the inevitable litigation comes. So using an indexing method, figuring out the fastest way and the most efficient way to store those kinds of documents and identifying them at creation. And so, again, it goes back two steps. It's again, an argument for the document retention program. If you're going to follow this indexing approach, having a system by which you can identify them up front, maybe sending them over to a separate server, a separate place on a server, a place where everyone's going to know, for example, the design documents are going to be located, the testing documents are going to be located, and then having a system by which you can export that information out, again, preferably in native format. Something I didn't mention earlier when we were talking about that is you want to keep the information as flexible as possible for as late in the litigation process as possible so that you're going to be able to respond to the demands of a court if they're going to demand that it be produced in certain different ways. It also gives you more flexibility, by the way, with the documents, being able to search them and identify information. But in any event, being able to export them out in most likely a native format and then be able to produce them in what's probably going to be in for the vast run of documents in a TIFF kind of format with a load file, and streamlining that process, the little amount you spend up front in getting that set is going to save you repeatedly over the lifetime of that particular product and litigation associated with that product. So that's a big bang for a small amount of buck when you're in that posture.
The last question I wanted to ask was about litigation holds, and most people out there already know that imposing a litigation hold can be a very difficult thing, and people panic about that in due course, but you've pointed out that ending a litigation hold is not something people give a lot of thought to, and it can also be quite a rigorous decision to make. So I was wondering, what is the risk around ending a litigation hold, and how should you be thinking that through to make sure that you do it well?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And as you pointed out, I think it's a part of the process that people really don't think about. And you need to be thinking about it actually at the beginning of the process. Because, for example, oftentimes these litigation, the litigation is going to result in you maintaining documents for much longer than you normally would under your document retention program. And so what's going to happen is when the litigation ends, when you're in that area where you can lift the litigation hold, or maybe even earlier depending on the type of litigation, but whenever you reach that point, you want to be in a position where you actually can retain the document. You can get rid of that document so it's not hanging around. Because going back to my first point, the one issue that drives litigation cost, discovery cost, is having too much. It's the volume. And so what you want to be able to do up front is make sure that you're handling the documents in a way that when you reach the end of the litigation, you actually are going to be able to destroy them. So, for example, you do not want to be putting documents on some kind of server where it has backups, and the backups are going to be saved forever. Hopefully you don't have backups that are saved forever in any event, but any type of permanent archiving solution, for example, is not where you want to be putting discovery documents. You want to have these documents in a way where when you make the legal judgment that there is no longer requirement to retain them, that you're able to destroy them, consistent with that document retention program. So that's step one, is thinking about where my discovery document's going to be. And by the way, making sure your agents, whoever's handling those documents for you, that they're going to be treating them in a similar way, because remember, those documents could very well, even though someone else may be holding them, you still may have possession, custody, or control of them for subsequent litigation, which would require you to go back to them and pull them out. So that's step one, is thinking about in advance how these documents are going to be handled, where they're going to be put. The second part, and why it's risky, is lifting litigation holds. You need to be very rigorous, because it is often the case, if you have a lot of litigation, that a document you're holding for one particular piece of litigation is also relevant for another. And so you need to have a period of due diligence where you look through what information you have retained for this litigation, check it against the currently existing litigation against the organization, and see if it might be responsive. So what does that mean? It means that, again, using a little bit of thought ahead and indexing at some level the document you're retaining, so you're going to be able to make that assessment at the end. For example, what custodians, what's the date range, if you use search terms, retain those search terms for later so you know what was pulled out, so that you can easily look at something and then cross-reference it against the litigation that you have and the kinds of information you're retaining for that litigation, which would be similar points. Which custodians are in play, what's the time frame, if you could use search terms or at least categories of documents that are currently in play in the other litigation, you would compare the two and see whether or not you're going to be able to get rid of those documents.
Well, Mike, you have covered plenty of ground today. Unfortunately, we're out of time right now, but we really appreciate all of your thoughts and your comments. Thank you very much.
Well, it was my pleasure, Matt. It's, as you can tell, it's a very interesting area, and I think companies who do this well will see tremendous benefits down the road.
Again, everyone, that was Mike Lackey of the law firm Mayer Brown. He was talking with us today about the post-production headaches you can encounter during e-discovery. You can find a link to his recent bulletin on these issues on the podcasts page of our website, complianceweek.com. And that is all for this week's podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.